Product Stacks is brought to you by Storyblok, one of the world's fastest growing headless CMSs. A headless CMS like Storyblok separates the back end from the front end. By moving to an API-based CMS like Storyblok, you can publish your content to any front end, whether that's your marketing website or directly inside your product. Developers love Storyblok because they can use it with any front end framework they prefer and create components that can be reused anywhere as content blocks, cutting development time in half. Content teams are excited about the discussions feature built directly into Storyblok's visual editor. No more Slack or email threads to discuss content changes. Join 86,000 developers plus companies like Harvard Business School, Adidas, Netflix, Oatly, and Pizza Hut who all use Storyblok by trying a free demo at storyblok.com/departmentofproduct. Go to storyblok.com/departmentofproduct. That's Storyblok with a K at the end, /departmentofproduct. So joining us today on Product Stacks is Justin Blumenthal from Coinbase. Thanks very much, Justin, for taking some time out of your day to join us and to share your product stack with the community. How are things going?
Yes, thanks for having me on. Super excited to be here and talk about all things product. I am currently at Coinbase, as you mentioned, and I'm really excited just to dive a bit deeper into how we approach product at Coinbase today.
Perfect. So what we normally do is, to set the context, we normally have a bit of a brief overview about your product process before we delve into your product stacks. Perhaps if we can start by just having a brief chat about your roadmap and strategy, and how do you decide what to build in your team and also broadly at Coinbase?
Yeah, so I think it's first important to take a step back and talk about how we actually organize the teams from a high level. We can go a bit deeper in the setup next. So at Coinbase, we are organized into functional product groups that are aligned around customer segments. And so today we have four product group areas, which all roll up to, you know, our CEO. Those within those product functional groups, and I sit in the consumer organization, those are then split up into, you know, functional areas. So we have a team for Coinbase Wallet. I happen to sit on the team that manages Coinbase peer-to-peer payments, Coinbase debit card, remittances, and a few others as well too. So we know exactly the product that we are going to be focused on as our core mission. You ideally want to create a roadmap that is improving the lives of your core customer, but also can achieve, you know, measurable outcomes vis-a-vis some, you know, North Star metric and core metric group as well too. So that is like the TLDR of how we approach the longer term road mapping and strategy aspect. Happy to dive a bit deeper into, you know, how we approach things on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I was going to ask just from a road mapping perspective, do you guys typically set your roadmap and strategy on a quarterly basis, or is it set on an annual basis, or do you not have a typical cadence, or does it depend on certain teams?
Yeah, I think the really cool thing about Coinbase is, you know, there is structure, but it really does feel like this fluid startup environment. We try not to get too rigid in, you know, quarterly road mapping, where it's like, hey, if you didn't have it on paper for, you know, Q1 2022, there's no way it's going to happen. Yeah. If you can argue that the best use of resources goes towards, you know, some feature that maybe you didn't get alignment on in the previous quarter, you can make that argument to leadership and have, you know, inter-quarter road mapping. I think at the end of the day, we always want to put the interests of our customers first. And in a market that's evolving as rapidly as crypto is, it's really important just to not get too stuck in your ways and realize that, you know, hey, like NFTs might take off one quarter, or DeFi might, you know, have a renaissance. So we really try to stay nimble and you know, just close to the latest and greatest trends to make sure that we're always serving our customers the in the best way possible.
Yeah, I can imagine in, you know, out of all the different industries, then crypto is probably the one that has to be as nimble as possible, given that it's everyone is still trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. So I can imagine from a product perspective, that is both exciting and also reasonably stressful, depending on what the market's doing.
Yeah, totally. And I think to that point, it's just really important at Coinbase for product managers to, you know, have their ear close to the ground and just always be talking to customers to, you know, get their feedback, learn what's working, what is not working, and, you know, continue to have this mindset of shipping very incremental iterative features that you can measure and test and gain feedback quickly so you can begin to improve the product.
Perfect. And so, yeah, just continuing this kind of broader context theme for you specifically at Coinbase and your team, what does a team look like? We've got a bunch of different roles, but Would you be able to just talk us through, like, what your team is comprised of, and then we'll start to build that picture?
Yeah, totally. So I think, again, like the cool thing about Coinbase is not all teams are set up the same, but what you'll find, at least on my team, is we currently have two product managers that lead up to our group head. And within that, we also have one engineering manager as well. And the engineering manager, product manager relationship is really special because those are effectively the two arms that are, ensuring that resources are, allocated in the best way possible and can raise blockers, if there are delays in timelines, there are just the blockers that are preventing the team from shipping, what we've committed to. I would say another key element that we have on the team is simply our lead designer as well too. And I spend a lot of time with my product designer, just to make sure that we're aligned on road mapping, on UX design. We also have around 10 engineers right now, and that's a mixture of front end and back end engineers. And we're very lucky to also have a data scientist as well too. Now at Coinbase, it's interesting. We don't actually have a product marketing manager that is embedded within the pod. But I also do work closely with a product marketing manager. And then you'll find some teams that have program managers. It really is on an ad hoc basis at Coinbase. Square was a little different where I was previously to Coinbase, but yeah, we currently don't have a program manager embedded in the team.
Okay, perfect. So would this be, so you mentioned that this was, what would you call this? This is called a pod at Coinbase.
Yep, exactly.
Perfect. And you mentioned as well that your lead designer is obviously a very critical part of your team as well. For something like crypto, I'm imagining doing things like user testing is quite interesting because it's such an innovative space. Do you focus mainly on people who are currently using crypto, or would you also speak to folks who are perhaps, a little bit wary of crypto and therefore haven't been exposed to it? Like, how do you approach user research and user testing for something like crypto?
Yeah, it's an awesome question. I live and die by user testing. It is a critical element, especially because, for Coinbase, we are on ramp to crypto for like so many beginner users who they may have only heard about crypto from their friend or maybe it's your mom, and they literally have no idea what these esoteric concepts of, private key management and Bitcoin, et cetera, actually mean. So I love to use tools like usertesting.com, and I'll work with my designer just to, spin up a quick mockup. You throw it on usertesting.com and you can get feedback very quickly. I tend to enjoy feedback from a mixture of both savvy crypto users as well as beginners or potentially people who haven't had exposure before. And you really don't understand some of the pain points and friction layers until you have, the uninformed start to interact with your product. And so, it's very important to not to rely too much on previously held assumptions. So I use user researching all the time, and it's a big part of our day-to-day at Coinbase.
Awesome. And out of all the kind of various entry points into crypto, as you say, Coinbase is probably the most user-friendly. I think Coinbase has done a really good job of shifting the perception of crypto as being for a select few who understand computers to opening it up to a much broader audience. That's really
Totally.
interesting. Okay, cool. And then finally, just with this team setup, what is your software development process?
Yeah. So we typically employ 2 week sprints at Coinbase. And what I will do with our engineering manager is before the sprint, just align on what are the top priorities, coming up. Do we have any big deadlines to meet in the next, 2 weeks or so? Are there any critical, bugs or, issues that we need to solve? And we have a good idea going into the sprint of like what we actually want to accomplish. Now, I would say with that said, it is relatively nimble. So, again, if like something comes up that is pressing that we need to tackle right away, we can shift around priorities relatively easily. And it's not like you have to go get approval from like a VP of Eng to, to make those changes. The cool thing about Coinbase is there's a ton of autonomy at the pod level, and we really try to drive down decision making to move quickly. And so you're empowered as a functional pod to, really make use of your available resources in the best way possible. So I really enjoy that aspect about my job here at the company.
Perfect. And what is your personal preference in terms of product process?
Yeah, I think it's really tough to like say I prefer one or the other. I think that the beauty of the 2 week cycle, we're now in a state in our, I guess, maturity as a company where, there's a mixture of very short-term and longer-term projects. It's tough on a pod to just split up the resource, such as that, you know, one engineering team focuses on, you know, fixing very iterative, you know, maybe like focus fully on product quality versus others who might be focused on multi-week, multi-month, maybe even multi-quarter projects. So
yeah,
I think there's like a beautiful, you know, it's a very, having the two-week cycle gives you the best of both worlds and allows you to focus on short-term and also, you know, longer-term initiatives. So it works out well for us. And I don't think it slows us down. If anything, we have this culture of, you know, just trying to ship as much as possible and as quickly and safely as possible. And the 2 week cycle doesn't interrupt that at all.
Perfect. Okay. Thanks for a lot of that context. That really helps. And so with that, shall we move on to the first area of your product stack that you've chosen to share with us?
Yeah, I would love to. So I'd like to talk a bit about decision making at Coinbase. So, you know, at Coinbase, we are very driven to make decisions as quickly as possible. And we have a couple of tools to help us do that. The first I'll talk about is called a PPS, which is a problem and proposed solution. And we typically like to just document as much as possible. We really believe in efficient communication and you know, really thorough writing is a big part of that. So we typically, if you have an idea for a product or you want to make a decision quickly and get some feedback from other cross-functional stakeholders, you'll write a document called a problem and proposed solution. And typically what it is like a lightweight document where you just very clearly but succinctly outline what the problem is and then propose a few solutions to it. And these PPSs will, you know, typically be around a page, 2 pages. Again, as I mentioned, because there's so much happening at Coinbase, you really don't want to make these 20-page documents. These are supposed to be, you know, lightweight ways to get across your point of views, make an argument for, you know, why we should be doing something and get feedback from, you know, whoever the stakeholders might be in a relatively quick fashion. The cool thing about these PPSs is you might write them for things that don't need necessarily executive approval. And you can use these as, I guess, like the Bible for why you've made a decision. And then afterwards, you can, you know, go on and execute whatever the proposed solution might be if you feel like you have enough cross-functional alignment from your stakeholders. So I would say like for decisions that don't require, you know, executive approval or won't result in massive shifts in our business strategy, these are really good templates. And so that would be my first part of my product stack.
Okay. Just a quick question on that. What I really like about this is like the structure of coming with proposed solutions as well, because then you've already done some of the thinking for people and people like to have solutions brought to them. But a question on that solution creation process. So let's say, for example, you're working on a problem and you then think of some solutions. Would you then think of those solutions in isolation or would you run those solutions past your pod and then present those to a stakeholder? Where do the solutions come from?
Yeah, it's an awesome question. I think like there's no right answer. My philosophy is you generally want to be as aligned as possible with all members of your core pod, right? So like to the extent of not distracting people. So I typically for decisions that have, you know, massive engineering impact will always rope in, you know, senior engineering members of the team, my engineering manager, maybe even my manager as well too, product designer, et cetera. Now, you don't have to necessarily tag them in the document and say, hey, come up with proposed solutions. But typically, you know, as the PM, you'll jot down some of your own, tag people for feedback, make sure they're aligned. And then once you show alignment within the team, maybe you'll distribute this document to other cross-functional stakeholders to get their input as well. But we just typically, we want to move as fast as possible. And so to get bogged down and ask others to craft the document for you is going to, you know, slow down the decision-making process. But nonetheless, I am a big proponent of just trying to get as much alignment from, you know, other folks as possible when going through these processes.
Perfect. Yeah, that makes complete sense. And you were saying that this type of document wouldn't be suitable for something that is like a major strategic change for the business. But if it's something that is you feel that you have autonomy over, then you would turn to this type of document.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. That makes sense. Perfect. Yeah. That's really, really helpful. Thanks very much. Should we move on to the second part of your product stack that you've chosen to share with us?
Yeah. I wanted to, on the vein of decision-making, just talk about, well, what happens when there are these existential problems and how do we approach those at Coinbase? And the template we use for that is called a Rapid. And it's, you can see here already that compared to the PPS, there's a lot more structure to it. And maybe I can just quickly talk through the structure of a Rapid at Coinbase. And the way we think about it is, you know, Rapid, which is an acronym which stands for Recommend, Agree, Perform, Input, and Decide, is, you know, really a tool that we use. We're making very complex decisions that might be one-way doors. And they're very important for, you know, when you have a decision at hand that might have massive ramifications, you know, from a revenue perspective or a strategic perspective for the company. And you oftentimes will want to get input from folks on the executive committee, maybe even your CEO. So, you know, we don't use these all the time, but they're a great tool for bringing together a large swath of stakeholders, both senior and junior, in a timely fashion. And it's the point of these rapids is to get quick turnaround feedback and decision alignment, you know, in a matter of days rather than weeks or months, or else the rapid process has failed. So just to go a little bit deeper here, the recommend is typically, you know, myself or another PM who has a problem that they, you know, want to recommend a solution. And then you'll have agrees, who are typically senior, you know, senior stakeholders, and they will have to give their input as to whether they agree, they disagree, or are neutral on the recommendation. The inputs are those who are typically closer to the problem statement at hand. It's very important that their opinions are here on paper. Now, the most important person in this process is the decide. And the decide is, you know, typically, you know, let's say a very senior exec person, maybe it's a VP of Eng, et cetera. They're the one whose final decision is a difference between whether, you know, the proposal actually goes through or not. And so they are taking a very critical eye to all of the input in the document in order to, you know, make their final decision. And then, you know, besides all of the input from the stakeholders, you'd very clearly articulate, you know, what the problem is, what the recommendation is, and you want to outline a few of your options and trade-offs as well too. And, you know, as the template mentions, we don't want to make these like 20 pages long. So, you know, you want to get your point across very quickly in these rapids, but they're a very effective tool. And, yeah. You know, the cool thing is you don't often see everybody agree one way or another or disagree. You want to see a healthy mix of opinions in these rapids, but they're supposed to be made for very tough problems that are, you know, essential to, I guess, like putting a fork in the road so you can move on as a product org.
Yeah, this is really nice. It's always nice to see companies who've thought about the process they undertake for decision making, because often decision making is just assumed to just happen. But actually spending some time to think about what the governance around decisions themselves should be is really nice. And I guess it makes things far more efficient. And what I was just going to ask, you know, if in a scenario there where you've got a bunch of people who disagree and agree, and maybe there's a few neutrals in there, what would be the next step then if you've got, you know, a lot, you know, if you've got like a no clear indication of which way you should go, do you then have a fallback that you always go back to as a next step, or does it just ultimately get decided by the person who is the decider?
Yeah, it ultimately gets decided by the decider. So at Coinbase, we have this RI culture where you have a directly responsible individual, and the buck stops with that person. So if the decider says, hey, y'all are very, you know, in you know, you have 100% alignment, but I don't personally agree with this decision, they can overrule you. I think a good decide would try to understand why everybody is in agreement on something that they personally are leaning, you know, no on before making that decision. But it's really up to the decider to, you know, make that final stand and decide if the company will move forward or not with a particular recommendation. So it's a lot of responsibility on whoever that decide is.
And how do you decide who the decider is?
Yeah, so there's no right or wrong. It's typically like, hey, you know, let's say you have a problem in the consumer org that maybe you don't think is a serious one-way door. Maybe you wouldn't recommend getting somebody on the executive committee. It's really up to your judgment. It would say up to who the recommend is to figure out who needs to be the right input, the right agrees, and the right decide.
This is really, really helpful. And some people are a bit put off by the idea that one person makes a decision ultimately. But personally, I actually prefer working in environments where I'm very clear, if there is large amount of disagreement, ultimately one person will decide, because otherwise you just end up in deadlock. I know that some PMs like to think of themselves as maybe this is the CEO of the product, but you know, sometimes a lot of the time you just aren't, and it is someone else's decision ultimately. So this framework looks really practical and really helpful. And would you supplement this with additional materials, or like, would this just be the only document that you would use? So I would imagine for, you know, for larger strategic decisions, you're going to have to provide other context for stakeholders to make that informed decision.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, this, the area where you'd provide that input is somewhat empty, but you would typically outline all of the appropriate material in the problem and recommendation sections here and link to all other documents. And yeah, you know, I also want to mention that, like, when you are writing these rapids, I think a really strong team would try to, you know, not just have everything happen in this document, but you might also set up a meeting to walk through relevant stakeholders about what the problem is. But yeah, you definitely want to make sure whoever is the recommender would provide as much relevant context in this document.
Perfect. Yeah, that's really, really helpful. Okay, great. And what specific tools do you use for this? I mean, are you guys using Google Docs or anything like that? Or do you use Coda? Do you use Notion? What tool would you use?
Yeah, we have a big Google Docs culture.
Yeah.
And we also do have some processes that run in Coda, but yeah, we aren't on a Notion train yet.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. All right, awesome. Should we move on to your third and final part of your product stack that you've chosen to share?
Yeah, I don't have anything to share my screen for there, so
no worries.
Stop sharing. But I guess the one that I would want to talk through is just around how we get customer feedback. I started alluding to that before, but a big part of my day-to-day as the PM is just really being the boots on the ground to understand exactly how your customers are responding to your product. So I typically employ a few different processes to get as much relevant customer feedback as possible. The first, as I alluded to, was, you know, actually conducting user testing through websites like usertesting.com, taking your product out into the field and having, you know, your friends or maybe even random people just use the product and gauging their feedback and, you know, just understanding exactly how they are faring with your product, right? I also enjoy using customer surveys quite frequently, and you can insert those through tools like, we use a tool called Sprig, which allows you to create product surveys and insert them at certain times in the product journey. So, you know, I manage our send and receive product, and we'll often ask users at the end of a send or receive, you know, what did you think about your experience? What feedback would you give us? Are there any issues that we run into? Is there anything we can be doing better? And that is a critical input into, you know, us then prioritizing different features on the roadmap, right? So you really want to make sure you're getting as much feedback from your users as possible. Now, besides Sprig, I also am constantly, you know, going on Twitter to see how people are talking about your product. And so honestly, it's like, it's super important that, you know, you take all feedback in stride, and people can be very animated about, you know, issues they're having with product on Twitter. But I personally love it. I love getting as much feedback as possible. And Twitter is a great way just to interact with, you know, other just normal people. And I've actually taken a lot of from there to prioritize on, you know, our quarterly or annual roadmap. Yeah. And then,
do you personally, like, are you allowed as a PM at Coinbase, are you encouraged to personally interact with customers directly regarding issues?
We have a support team that is fantastic, and they are always, you know, on the ball in case customers do raise any, you know, concerns or they have feedback. But, you know, I think, yeah, I love just interacting with our customers personally. I think it's a really important part of the PM toolkit to, you know, actually have the skills to interact with your customers, right? I mean, understand their pain, and you know, that's the only way to build empathy in my opinion.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, great. Was there anything else regarding user research you wanted to mention? Or
yeah, so I would just say that, you know, that is like the qualitative aspect of how we approach customer research. And then there's obviously the quantitative aspect. We have an incredibly data-driven culture at Coinbase. So we want to understand, you know, if you change like a button or you add a screen, et cetera, like, What is the actual material shift in consumer usage? And to do that, I rely on tools like Looker, you know, Datadog, Snowflake, and we have some other tools as well. So I'm constantly, you know, writing queries myself, working with my data scientists to understand, you know, how customers are actually using our product. And so between the qualitative and quantitative, I think we have a very robust approach to just gathering as much feedback as possible from our customers.
Perfect. And just, I guess, a broader question with regards to user research and just user sentiment and feedback in general. With a product like Coinbase, which is so sensitive with regards to what's happening in the markets, do you find that people's feedback is almost somewhat linked to the to what's going on in the markets, or are people quite impartial? Can they keep their kind of their own personal experience of losses or gains for their own portfolio? Do they tend to, does that tend to influence their feedback or not? Just out of interest.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think we are not immune to the market movements, but I would just say at the end of the day, in times of incredible market turmoil, our users rely even more on a trusted and safe crypto exchange. And so trust and safety is, you know, at the core of who we are. It's why our customers decide to, you know, use our product. And so it's actually very helpful in these, you know, turbulent times to see our customers, you know, if they are raising issues that make them feel like they aren't necessarily as safe or they've lost trust in a particular product, to hear that, because then we can go back and very quickly, you know, prioritize fixes or, you know, new features to assuage like any of their fears. So yeah, but I think like, you know, making products in the good times is like, it's too easy, right? I enjoy a lot of the volatility because it allows us to, you know, really ship the most impactful stuff that's going to make a difference in the lives for our customers.
Yeah, I can imagine it's certainly a roller coaster. I guess, and not many PMs will get to experience that because not every, like most products are not directly impacted by what's going on in the market. So products like Coinbase and other exchanges are probably quite unique in that respect. So I bet that's
totally.
Okay, brilliant. Thanks very much for sharing everything with us today. One final question that we've been asking people is, you know, aside from the areas that you've chosen to share with us today, are there any other kind of products and tools that you use on a personal level day to day that you couldn't live without?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I don't think I mentioned this, but today Coinbase is a fully remote company. When I am working from home, I'm listening to a ton of music. You know, it's when I'm not in meetings, which, you know, might not be too often during the day, but when I have some time, you know, I will have my Spotify app, and I also have these like Sonos speakers, which, you know, provide like really good sound quality. I think the Sonos product team did a really nice job with their app. It's performant, it's very logical, and it's architected really well. And then Spotify has just done a fantastic job. Somehow they know exactly what I want to hear. And I look forward every Monday to my Discover Weekly playlist. So, you know, I'm just constantly playing a lot of music. And especially now, my 2022 Wrapped playlist came out. So it's been nice to see, you know, all the songs that I listened to over the past year. But yeah, music's a big part of my product toolkit.
And are you brave enough to share your top artists of 2022 or not?
I love that. Let me see what it is, actually. I think it was, let's see. Let me see if I can find it quickly. I think it was something like EDM related.
Okay, cool. Mine was Britney Spears, by the way. Just
it was Britney Spears.
Kind of manage expectations. So
I love it. I think it was this guy, Tin Liquor, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like,
maybe
kind of like
put
EDM
a link
stuff
in the description.
Yeah. All right, I'll put a link to my rap playlist in the description. Yeah,
sounds good. Okay, perfect. And if people want to follow you online, where's the best place to kind of check you out?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. My handle is jblumy, JBLUMY. And then I'm also on LinkedIn. You can just find my name, Justin Blumenthal. You can, you know, DM me. I'm happy to help out. If you have any questions about product or Coinbase, or if you have any feedback, you know, I'd definitely love to engage anybody in the community. Those are probably the two best places.
All right, awesome. Thanks very much, Justin, for taking some time out of your day to share your product stack with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's been super fun and really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.